All right. You are listening to Green Left Radio, and on the we're going to be doing for our first interview for the program. We're going to be interviewing Sue Ball from Green Left. Basically, Sue Ball has just recently written an article on the whole 1998 MUA kind of dispute, which was a very far-reaching kind of workers kind of dispute, and Sue Ball happened to be part of the solidarity campaign supporting this ongoing industrial dispute in Sydney, I think they were living in Canberra at the time, but they kind of reported about they were writing about how they were kind of a witness to all the kind of solidarity, and we're going to sort of have a bit of a discussion with her about, you know, the significance of this dispute, especially in the lead up to May Day. Good morning, Sue.
Hi, how are you going?
Yeah, I'm good. So I guess maybe to start off for our listeners, especially for our listeners who are not necessarily that familiar with the history. In fact, myself, I'm not completely that familiar with the history. What can you, I guess, give us a bit of an overview of the 1998 sort of MUA dispute?
Yeah, well, what was really significant was that at the time, the trade union movement as a whole was a lot stronger than it is today. I was actually living in Canberra at the time, but the dispute was happening in the waterfront in all of the major cities in Australia. And what had happened is Corrigan, who was the owner of Patrick's, which was one of the waterfront companies and still is today, a major waterfront company, decided that they did not want to deal with the MUA, the Maritime Union of Australia, any longer. In their waterfront, they wanted to be able to control their own labour force and not have the union interfering, as they sort of saw it, in any of the management practices and the practices that employed people in the waterfront. So they decided that they were going to completely change their labour practices and bring in contractors who were non-union companies and try and eliminate the unions from the waterfront. Now, the reason why it was so significant is that the various different unions that actually made up the MUA, and remember, the MUA, like many unions today, is actually an amalgamation of a number of different unions, and, you know, like the Seamen's Union and the various different waterfront unions of the day, they'd fought long and hard to change employment practices. So traditionally, 100-odd years ago, the practice on the waterfront was that workers would turn up and then the companies would just choose who they wanted for the day and everyone else could essentially get stuffed. And what the union had done over the years was to make it a practice that the union played that role so the work was fairly shared around and everybody got a fair go and there's no discrimination. And it's that Corrigan wanted to break. So he, with his company, they then essentially locked out all the union members and then brought in these non-union companies. And they did it in a really grotesque way, where they just bought in what we called scabs, because they were scabs, many of whom had balaclavas on, and it was all very cloak and dagger. And meanwhile, the Howard government, which had only been elected about 2 years before, supported all of this and thought this was just fantastic, because if they could break the power of the union on the waterfront, they could break the power of the union of unions everywhere. So that's what it was about.
And what can you tell us, because you recount this kind of amazing kind of story of a massive protest at one of the climatic kind of points of the campaign at Melbourne's East Swanston Dock. And I wanted to kind of hear your comments on some of the kind of pivotal kind of points in this sort of campaign.
Okay. Well, what had happened, better get the dates right here, but it was in April of 1998. So very dramatically, Corrigan sends in his scabs to shut the ports, to kick out all the union members and shut the ports. And the union movement still had the capacity, and probably still does if we wanted to flex our muscle. But, of course, we never flex our muscle like this anymore. The union movement rallied really quickly, led by the MUA and, of course, then later on the ACTU, to get down to every port and set up picket lines. And the MUA set up the picket lines, and then unionists from all over the country would come down. So in my case, I was living in Canberra. We had a pretty strong union movement at the time, led, interestingly, by the Public Service Union, because we were the biggest union in Canberra at that time. And what we'd do is we'd get everybody together, get on a bus, and go out and help a picket line. So it was our turn in the experience that I had to get up to the Darling Harbour one, and that's what I write about in the Green Left article. But the most significant picket lines were probably the one in Botany in Sydney and the one in Melbourne. And really, I think all eyes continuously throughout the dispute were on the Melbourne one. And the reason why is because Melbourne, of course, is and still is and was then the most unionised capital city in Australia. And the strongest wing of the trade union movement was here. So it was really Patrick's and the Howard government really wanted to do whatever they could to break the Melbourne ones. And so that was critical. And everyone knew this. So everybody from all over Victoria, every unionist, was doing their damnedest to get down to the picket line and help out. Now, part of the reason why that was happening too was because the MUA was injuncted off. So it was the beginning of the era when they'd started to use the courts. And they've been using the courts for a long time, but in nasty and horrible ways to attack unionists. And, of course, the Howard government, through their Minister Reeve, had been rolling out these new amendments to laws to try and attack trade unionists. So they managed to injunct off a lot of the MUA, and the trade union community in Melbourne went, right, we'll stuff that. We'll just get everybody down and have a community picket line. And on the really famous night in question, for me, I'd been up at the Darling Harbour picket line. It was very, very exciting. And then at 6 o'clock, Canberra was due to come off the picket line, or the Canberra workers, and the Wollongong workers arrived. And very, very exciting because we basically saluted each other. We got in the bus, came back to Canberra. Wollongong took over. And as we were coming back to Canberra, phone calls were coming through. And remember, this is before mobiles and stuff, so we're sort of getting this stuff over the radio, or, you know, the bus driver got messages and whatnot. Can't quite remember how. Must have had some mobiles at the time, that things were hotting up in Melbourne. And what had happened, everybody knew that there'd be a huge police attack. And so thousands of supporters had come in, like they estimate 3,000 to 4,000, and they linked arms and stayed there all night. As we got back to Canberra late at night, reports were coming through. And the next morning we get woken up really early to say that there'd been a victory. What had happened was that the state government in Victoria, which of course was a Liberal one at the time, had brought in just about every cop from every part of Victoria, like thousands of cops. They'd essentially just closed rural police stations and sent them down for a full-on battle. And the story from all the comrades who were there at the time was that there was 4,000 people linking arms right in front of them, like within centimetres apart, was the front line of the cops. And the cops were all getting ready with their batons to bash the hell out of the picket line. So it would have been a really scary situation. Well, it was scary from what you hear. And it was all looking as if it was ready to attack. And suddenly the word from the cops went up. They looked to their left, they looked to their right, and there's footage of this. And the signal was to march off. So suddenly they turned to the right or the left and marched off. And the picket line was watching in amazement, because what had happened is that the CFMEU, the construction union, had got as many members as they could from their city sites on that Saturday morning to amass at a couple of building sites, and then they just marched down en masse, surrounded the police behind them, and they were led by Johnny Cummins, who was, you know, a legendary CFMEU leader and old BLF leader, who had a huge authority, and he just brought the construction workers down almost like a military tactic, surrounded them, and then the cops knew they'd been outnumbered. And at that stage, they turned and marched off. And everyone thought, my God, we've achieved a victory. And it was immensely exciting for everybody there, but of course around the country, because it showed what workers can do. Well-organised, disciplined workers were able to outsmart and outwit the highly armed police force that was ready to attack. Hmm. And it was that particular victory then that turned the tides for the dispute.
Hmm. Oh, that's brilliant.
And the kind of next kind of thing aspect is I wanted to kind of just hear your guys' comments, because one of the sort of, in especially in terms of its kind of lessons for kind of May Day, and I kind of want to hear about, you know, the kind of experiences of the picket line and this dispute and what it says about the important idea of workers' control of society.
Yeah, well, one of the things that was really clear was that the MUA could not win without unity. They required unity to win. And they began to realise, and, you know, we've always known this, that they would never win the dispute with, you know, such a highly, with a huge amount of money that they were, you know, this was a company that had its own funds plus the whole support of the Liberal government. You know, so the whole apparatus of the state was ready to be used if necessary. Workers and their leaders knew that they couldn't win this if we had continued to have petty disputes amongst ourselves. We had to be united, we had to have accepted leadership, and we had to be disciplined. And these discussions about how to do this were happening everywhere. Now, if the MUA or the ACTU had just gone, well, we decide everything, you don't get to say anything, blah, 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 we know that that always leads to confrontation. So what had happened is that the MUA and the ACTU allowed, to some extent, each picket line to be run in a fairly democratic way and to make its decisions from within a framework. So as each group of workers came down, you're essentially inducted in, but you were part of the process. So just as an example, at the Darling Harbour one that I was at, there was a huge banner of a penis that had been erected, and underneath it had, you know, up your ass, Corrigan, or words to that effect. And or Patrick's or something. And anyway, some of the feminists and the gay and the queers that came down to the site said, "Oh God, that's really offensive. You know, that's really oppressive and offensive." Anyway, the MUA was a bit shocked because they thought it was quite good. They thought it was, you know, real expression of militancy. And so we had this debate. And long before the end of the day, through the debate, the MUA, who, of course, were the accepted leaders of the picket line, said, right, so if we keep this up, we're going to have sections of our supporters really upset with us, and it's going to cause disunity. So they pulled it down. And it was just, it's just one little example, but it was, you know, an impressive example because I thought it was really great. My supporter had painted it. But it was a small example of how those sort of things can work. And if the dispute had gone on, we would have had, you know, and some did, you know, there would have been committees to provide food, there would have been committees to start organising fundraising, and there was, of course, a certain amount of fundraising, because to keep the workers on strike, well, they were locked out, but to keep the workers at the picket line, people were losing money. So you begin to see ad hoc organisations that start to make decisions, that start to work out how to move forward and keep things going and fundraise and so on and so forth. The dispute didn't end up going as long as that, but it was going to get there. And I think that's the sign. The sign is that with unity, people coming together, a democratic operation, the setting up of committees that actually have a meaningful role, blah, 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 you can begin to see how workers' organisations could actually operate and organise society in the longer term. That's the potential of it. So you see the seeds of that, and, of course, then you have a couple of victories which boost morale and energy. People start to want to commit more and play a bigger role. So people learn all these skills, leadership, and so on and so forth, as long as it's kept democratic and everyone has a say. So I think they were the sort of things that we saw in that short period.
That's really interesting too, that sort of political cross-pollination that you talk about with the incident of the phallus banner. And it reminds me a bit of that great film about lesbians and gays support the miners and that kind of, that cross-pollination that happened there during the miners' strike.
Very similar, very, very similar. In fact, I love that film. I can't think of what it's called, but I love that
film. It's called Pride, yeah.
Pride, of course. And you know, like, because I think Pride is actually a more modern example of, well, the film itself, I mean, because, of course, that dispute happened 10 years earlier than the one I'm talking about. But it's a great example of how working class people actually can unite and support each other, even though they're quite diverse in background, you know, and orientation. So, yeah, and I think we saw glimpses of that on that MUA picket line.
And, Sue, do you kind of have any kind of concluding comments you'd like to kind of make, especially in terms of the significance of this dispute?
Yeah, well, I think that is, you know, that is the significance of May Day, of course. May Day celebrates these workers' struggles and the potential to move beyond. And you sort of lose that a bit in today. You know, here we are, what, 23 years later, where the unions are facing, you know, dire consequences, where there's been huge bureaucratisation and workers don't have a real say in most of their unions. You lose that focus a little bit and you begin to think, what role can they really play? But I think the fact that these are recent historical events, that many of us, certainly older, you know, a lot of older comrades really, but they're recent and they're enough to show that united we can do these things. And that's actually what May Day should celebrate, and that's actually what we should sort of look back to and feel that we can rebuild these very important groups of struggle. So, yeah, I think that's the lesson in actual fact, that despite all of the massive onslaught of capitalism that we're seeing at the moment, there are always nooks and crannies and cracks that we need to exploit and fight against and build up opposition to, and not be demoralised by the fact that, you know, we have been through hard times in recent days. You know, things change. Things change very quickly, as we saw under COVID, and they can when people get united and fight back.
Mm-hmm. We've always got the numbers on our side.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the MUA dispute showed that. You know, a lot of... There was 4,000 at the Melbourne picket line, but there were hundreds of thousands in support. And if things had got more nasty, a lot more people would have shown up.
Mm. All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Sue. I think, it was very inspiring. I kind of like hearing firsthand from your experiences and your memories of this kind of amazing 1998 waterfront kind of dispute. In fact, we're going to, following this, we're going to be playing, we'll play a song by Roll On by The Living End, which was actually based on that whole historical dispute.
Great.
Good. Thanks heaps, Sue.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, Sue Bull there. Veteran trade unionist and someone who, as we've heard, helped organise solidarity out of Canberra with the picketing waterfront workers in 98.
But, sorry about that. I'll just go play a quick announcement. And as I kind of said before, we'll go play a quick song by The Living End, which was about, well, I actually have, I'm pretty sure I've listened to the song before, but I didn't actually know it was about the 1998 waterfront kind of dispute.
I have listened again with fresh ears.
Okay, you're listening to Green. Just play a quick announcement and then we'll play the song afterwards.